Well, this is going to be very helpful to people. We know that in the life of the older adult, we have two important factors. We have health and we have finance. And so I'm bringing to you today Peter Spett. Peter is an attorney who helps people with stockbroker problems. And I have to say that life has been it's been a little shaky for everybody, no matter what you're doing, you know, whether you're in real estate or whatever. You have to just think very carefully about what you do. But I wanted to really know about you a little bit. I think our audience always likes to know who's on the show, Peter. So your background and experience would be really a good thing for people to know about you.
Well, first of all, Anita, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure and a privilege to be here.
Thank you.
And I hope that the information that I impart will be of use to some of your listeners. So I am an attorney. I've been an attorney for 19 years. And over the past 5 or 6, I've really concentrated in representing investors who have lost money on their investments and have claims against the stockbroker or the brokerage house. And how did I get where I am today? Well, I grew up in New York. I grew up in a suburb of New York and went to college and law school at Columbia University in New York. And when I graduated, I went to a big Wall Street law firm and really concentrated on getting a general background in litigation. Litigation is where people basically bring cases to court or companies and people have to defend themselves in court. And over the years, I started at that law firm and actually represented some very big brokerage houses during that time. And back then, one of the big investment products that people had trouble with and were suing one of our clients were limited partnerships. And
I was in a lot of limited partnerships, I know.
As we talk, we'll see that these issues recur again and again and again, and people, investors, get into they call them different things, the stock brokerage companies, but a lot of these products, it's just there's a history of having the same issues in these products. So after working for the big law firm, I went to a smaller law firm that actually represented stockbrokers when they got into some criminal problems. So I had a background in representing the industry, this brokerage industry.
Let me get back to something, though, because you are you have such a gentle soul. Did your aura. How did you get into litigation? Because it's funny, my son said, no, I don't want to get into the courtroom and litigation. And you don't seem like you're someone who really would get your hands rubbed together and say, okay, here I go.
Well, you know, and one thing you learn about different lawyers is everybody has their own style. You know, you have your litigators that are bulldogs and just are itching for a fight. I got into litigation because intellectually appealed to me. I it was a chess match, and I really psychologically, I always had a disposition to help those in need. So it's actually, if you know, for myself and representing clients, I always try to look at things holistically, and look at my clients' needs, not just their legal needs, but also their emotional needs, because litigation involves a lot of emotions, a lot of feelings, sometimes of guilt and hurt. And so for me, it was an attraction because of the resolution process. Sometimes you really have to go full bore and go to court. Sometimes things are negotiated back and forth with the other side. But there are many ways of resolving issues. The only thing that I keep in mind always is to zealously represent my clients.
And you know, thinking about it, because I have spoken with attorneys in your field, that now you really don't go to court. Most of it is arbitration, so it's even easier in a sense. I mean, it's maybe, you know, I guess years ago it wasn't. I guess you could, but then I don't know who the stock brokerage. What is the firm, the organization that watches that?
Okay, so right now, stock brokerage firms are supervised on several different levels, but the Securities and Exchange Commission supervises them, as well as they are self-supervised, self-regulatory organization. I can explain what that means later, but that's called the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, FINRA. When an investor first meets a stockbroker, they usually sign a contract, and that contract has a provision requiring disputes to go to arbitration. And arbitration is not court; it's formal process, but it's designed to be a quicker resolution of a dispute. But it is an adversarial proceeding. And there are other ways that things get resolved. Sometimes things get resolved through negotiation or mediation. But at the outset, most claims against brokerage firms are filed as arbitrations with the FINRA, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. And that just gets back to my background. After I worked at the law firms, I went in-house to a brokerage company, and one of my primary responsibilities at that big brokerage house in New York City was to represent the company in these arbitrations. So after doing that for three years.
So you learned it on the other side, didn't you?
Right. After doing it for 3 years, I said, you know what? This isn't really where my heart is. My heart is actually coming to resolutions to help the customers, and I could be more service and more help to those in need if I switch sides. So I switched sides about eight years ago when I opened up my own firm, and it's only me. And that's my background.
That's a wonderful thing to hear. I guess I wish that maybe all stockbrokers were lawyers and they were stockbrokers too, and then they would, you know, understand it. But anybody in the financial field, it is a very big responsibility, and some people do it very well, and they've been in business for 20 years, and there's no problems. And then some people, whether they were selling vacuum cleaners or stocks, just don't do it the way that, you know, you would do it for your mother and father. I guess that's really the way to say it. So it's nice that there are people there who can at least help that person, especially if they're a senior, to know what happened that maybe shouldn't have happened. And there are times, and I know that – and it is true that some people think that because they've invested in something that, you know, it didn't make money and it's everybody's fault. It's not everybody's fault, you know.
And I wholeheartedly agree with that, Anita. I want to say that, you know, I am an attorney. I am not here to give financial advice to anybody.
Right.
I haven't taken any of the tests that brokers take, and there are, for every bad broker, there are probably 9 or 10 good brokers.
I know.
And the only thing that I observe is that there are certain warning signs when things are not going right that I can impart my observations and let the listener know what the general law and regulations are. But I'm not here to bash stockbrokers. As a matter of fact, I think it's a very noble profession. I think that stockbrokers are, in most cases, useful. But, you know, like every profession, right, there are good apples and there are bad apples.
And I think the value to have you writing your article, which was really great, people who are listening can go to the January issue. There'll be another one in February, but you can go in January and you can read Peter Spett, that S-P-E-T-T, his article. And it's really what we want you to do. We want you to be able to educate that consumer so that they don't – it's not that I don't want you to get business, but that they don't, you know, get into a lot of trouble. And so if you could spend time doing that, that would be wonderful.
And yes, I think that one thing that is happening now this time of year is that customers of brokerage firms, in addition to getting their monthly account statements, which they get every month, now they get their year-end summaries. Now they get their 1099s to give to their accountants. And what I wrote in the Boomer Times this month was that, for those who haven't seen it, was that people should really carefully look at the mail that they receive from their stockbroker or their brokerage house know what's going on in their account, because there are several reasons for it. One is when you enter into a relationship with your stockbroker, as an investor, you signed a contract that you said in most cases, unless it's a non-regulated stockbroker who is really a fraudster out there, but if it's a legitimate stockbroker, as an investor, you signed a contract that said that you're going to review your statements, review what you're sent by the stockbroker, and then within a certain period of time, complain if there's a problem. So you have this legal obligation built in by the contract, which almost every brokerage house has it as standard language. So that's important, because if a problem arises down the road, that's going to be the first defense that the brokerage house is going to raise, or the stockbroker is going to raise. Doesn't matter what they said on the phone. If they had it in black and white and it was on your statement, they're going to claim as an investor that you were responsible.
And the interesting thing is sometimes I'm calling someone not as a stockbroker, but because I'm trying to get their ad or something, and it may be a stock brokerage. And it always says, do not leave any information unless you talk to someone. Now, that's, I think, fairly new. That wasn't always the way it was. Why?
Well, they want to make sure that orders are clear. So when you place an order to buy or sell a security, there's a whole procedure that they are required by FINRA to undergo. And they're required to take the order, put it into the system, and then send the customer, the investor, a confirmation afterwards. That's another thing in the mail that you receive, that if you read the small print on the back of the confirmation, they will say something like, if you have a dispute on this trade, let us know within 3 business days or 5 days or 7 days. I mean, they vary in length, but it's usually a very short time period. And again, this is usually one of the main defenses of the brokerage houses. It's the legal term for it is ratification. And a lot of the claims that I bring on behalf of investors, that usually is a defense that the brokerage house raises.
And so it's very important then, maybe when they're getting their stocks, when they're buying their stocks, that they see that and it's very clear to them. So those of you listening, remember, if something doesn't seem right to you, maybe it's their error, maybe it's your error, question it, but you better do it right away. And all of us tend to put it over there because we have other things to do, and so we don't want you to do that, because then, you know, it's kind of like returning clothing. If you buy something that's not right, the clothing people have been pretty good about it, but, you know, if it's a month later, they'll probably say sorry.
Right. Exactly. And I don't mean to go too much on the other side. I'm just giving you the arguments that I encounter.
Right.
You know, there's something called suitability, which is something that I will come to over and over again in our discussions, which means that investments have to be appropriate for the investor's age, time horizon, financial needs and goals, tax status, experience. There's a host of things, risk level, risk tolerance level, so liquidity needs. So there are multiple factors that people should be talking with their stockbrokers about. Their stockbroker should be well aware of it's a whole profile. And if this isn't the case that you're having with your stockbroker, you should really sit down and talk to your stockbroker and make sure that your stockbroker understands that they have this type of information. Stockbroker will want that information so he can give you, or he should, or she could give you, appropriate investment recommendations.
So I think that after hearing Peter Spett talk, I think it'd be very important if you have any questions. I know it says that it's a free consultation. And if you want to call him, I'm going to give you, since this is a radio show that extends quite far all over South Florida, let me give you an 800 number. It's 888-217-4919. That's 1-888-217-4919. 4919, and you can get on his website. It's a very nice website. It's SpetLaw, that's SpetLaw.com. And he is located in Boca Raton, but that's kind of in the middle of South Florida. And I'm sure if you have some big case, he'd probably even go down to where you are.
As a matter of fact, I usually go to, first of all, when I give a consultation, if it is something that is, you know, significant, I will always go and meet the potential client myself.
I think that's a very good point. And, of course, here, I'm sure that you are experienced enough now that you can talk to someone over a phone, and probably within 5 minutes, you pretty much know if they're just a complainer or if they really have something that's very valid.
And there was something that I touched on before with the with the confirmations that I just want to go back to as far as complaining and et cetera. If you do spot a problem, you should really contact the broker or his boss right away and say that there is a problem. Sometimes, and very often, it's just a innocent mistake. And sometimes it's something more significant. But, you should consult a lawyer if you have a significant legal problem. But, if you have something that just seems wrong as far as a trade, always call the broker and the branch or his branch manager and talk to them.
And I was thinking maybe even as they don't want you to do something on the phone, maybe you should go see them. So then you have a record that you've seen them and not maybe just on the phone or something, because, you know, it depends on how serious it is.
Right.
Maybe it's just a typographical error or something.
Again, the information I provide here is sort of general, and every individual circumstance is going to depend upon the individual situation. Sometimes it may call for a person-to-person meeting, and, you know, that's something that I'm happy to discuss with people as well.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I think the one thing that stands out on all this is that right now everybody's pretty frantic about getting more money because it's hard to live on their Social Security, even on some of their investments, and they are – you know, they're very anxious. And just like we know that there have been some people, you know, in the world like the Madoff. He did. He made off. I had
right.
to
made
remember
off
the
Madoff,
right. That you really do have to rely on people who you feel are appropriate. And just because your friends tell you, see, that's the other thing with friends, right? That's where he made so much money. He had every friend told another person of another friend. But many people have their kids, too, to discuss things with, and a lot of them, some of them don't want to. Of course, you don't want anybody to know what they have, but that's not such a good idea either.
Right. Well, you know, I do feel that repression or suppression is often something that I encounter. People, when they have a problem, and we're all tempted to these tend to push it to the back and hope that it'll go away.
Are they embarrassed?
You know, there's multiple reasons. Guilt, embarrassment. I mean, I'm not a psychologist.
Just from people I've taken
on as clients, there's a host of very, very powerful emotions, human emotions, that make people not want to pay attention to potential problems. And bringing it out in the open and talking it out, even though it might not be comfortable at first, ultimately saves a lot of grief down the road. And obviously, as with a health issue, the earlier you spot a problem, the quicker or the easier it can get resolved. So you like to take care of small problems quickly rather than have them become big problems.
Tell me something. What are some of the types of security cases that you do commonly handle?
So there are quite a number of categories of different types of security cases that come up. One is, we sort of alluded to it, the Madoff situation, where it's an actual fraud. And somebody, a broker or somebody who is not a broker but a scam artist, lied to you or withheld material information from you, and you lost your money, and there was an outright intent on that person to separate you from your money.
As compared to the casino.
Right.
Because you go to a casino, you know that you have, you know, it's a win or lose, right?
Right, right. These are like Ponzi schemes, which are pyramid schemes using one investor's money to pay off another investor. And there's other situations, just outright lies. They hand you a piece of paper and say it's a security and it isn't. So that's not as common as you would think, because usually those people get caught eventually, but those are big cases, and those sometimes affect a lot of people. But more common in my practice are these cases of unsuitable investment recommendations, and this especially hits those who are retired, those who are over 65, who are the broker gave recommendations and did not use reasonable efforts to get the customer's information, or did not care, or recommends the same investment to all their clients. And, you know, recommendations of investments have to be very particular to you. Everybody's profile and everybody's financial needs and goals are very different. But when you're retired and on a fixed income, there are certain risks that you may not want to take with your money. And as I'm not a broker, so I can't advise you how much risk a person should be comfortable with, but it is a discussion that you should be having on an ongoing basis with your stockbroker, and asking yourself questions like, are my investments causing me anxiety? Am I sleeping well at night? You know, things like that. If your investments are causing you anxiety and you're not sleeping well at night, those are warning signs that they might not be suitable for you. And these are times when you should make sure that you've had that discussion with a stockbroker. And if you're not happy or you think something's wrong, then consult with an attorney.
Well, and the other thing that I have heard from people is they're with a stockbroker and they now want to move to another stockbroker. And somehow they're too shy. They don't know how to hurt the person's feelings. You know, they don't want to hurt. They like the person, but they really want to go somewhere else. And that happens with doctors, too, you know. You have a doctor, and yet you're not really happy, but you don't want to hurt the doctor's feelings. I don't know. Do you have any advice about that?
Well, it's a business. It's not a friendship. You may be friends on a separate level, but, you know, and I can only say a lesson my father always told me: be careful when you do business with friends and relatives. you really have to separate the two. You have a business relationship with your stockbroker, and you have to make the best decisions that are right for you. And your stockbroker, believe me, will understand, because it's a business. It's not. And if your stockbroker is offended by it, they have to get over it, because you have to do what you feel comfortable with and go with, just like any other field, a lawyer, a doctor, stockbroker, all these professions. You have to find the right fit for you.
Now, do you ever do seminars? Do you ever do anything like that people can hear about you or know about you?
It's funny that you ask. I am developing that. And I am considering giving some talks in the future, and I will certainly let you know on this program and in Boomer Times when I have that set up.
You might be able to go speak at maybe some of the retirement communities. You know, that might be a way to do it, that you can go to them rather than have them even come into your office.
Absolutely. That's something that I am considering.
So if anybody's listening right now, and if that's something that you would like for your community, I'm sure Peter would be more than happy to go and give you a 15-minute speech or something with some bagels, and you can just provide him a bagel or coffee or something.
Absolutely, free of charge, and maybe a little bit more. As you can see, I can go on and on about this. I enjoy talking about it, so maybe 15 minutes for me, and then I'd take questions. And if we develop on this program a time where I can answer questions, or if you want to, if you don't feel comfortable calling me directly and you want to,
can email you.
You can email me and
I'm even going to give an email address. I don't do that often because people, remember, this is Pencil Talk Radio. You're supposed to have your pencil here and you're supposed to have a notebook, and I'll try it with you now. But it's PS, and that's because it's Peter, Peter S. And so, because it's, no, it's Peter M. Why is he, oh, no. I'm sorry, P, oh, P, Spet, excuse me, my glasses. Okay, so it's P for Peter, P-S-P-E-T-T, Spet, at spettlaw.com. That's easy enough. So it's P-S-Pet, P-E-T-T, at spettlaw.com. And you can get on his website, which is spettlaw.com, to be able to see what goes on. And I was just thinking back about some experiences I had years ago when I had invested in some stocks, and my husband and I did. And we were told that these were stocks that were, what was the word? It wasn't risky. It was another word that they used.
Volatile, maybe?
It was even another word that just said that, listen, you know, this is, you can make a lot of money, but you better have some money. Don't wait and live on this money because it may not happen. He was very honest about it. It was one of the big firms. And we took the chance. It did work out okay, but I really respected him for that. I really felt that he, was telling us yes, and we did make money, but if we were someone, you know, maybe in their 80s or 90s and they wanted to make money that, and they lost the money, maybe it would have made a difference and maybe it wouldn't. They would have had millions and it wouldn't have made a difference. But I think it's what you were saying before. I think people have to know just the good and the bad of the investment, right?
Right. And this is based on my experience, and it's also my view. And you'll hear this from a lot of financial advisors as well. Risk and reward are related. The bigger the upside, the bigger the downside. So if you are looking to make a higher percentage or beat the market, et cetera, you got to be prepared that you are taking greater risk. And if anybody ever says that they've come out with a safe way to beat the market, question it, because I in my career, I haven't really ever seen that happen. Things go up and certain sectors are hot, and then that sector cools off and then another sector becomes hot.
Yeah, it's to be conservative, I think, is really the answer and with it when they're dealing with something. And so we hope that they never have to call you.
Well, but, like you know, I said, I'm happy to answer questions.
Right.
But, right,
we know
yes.
what human nature is, so we will do that. But we really appreciate your being on our show, Peter, and we look forward to having you on again. And we thank you so much for participating with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it was great.